The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 565, recorded on March 3rd, 2020.
Welcome to the 565th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 398th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Dinser.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and a gaming flashback.
Yeah, so last week, for whatever reason, the podcast didn't record and we didn't have any backups, so it's gone to the ages. I don't even know if it was all that good, but, you know.
I thought it was good enough.
So this episode is going to have one item from last week in the gaming flashback and two new items. Although, there's some stuff that I didn't put down on the items. For example, today is someone's birthday.
Oh, my birthday was the 28th.
No, not you.
Oh.
Today, on this date, the Switch was released 3 years ago, so this is the 3-year anniversary of the Switch. To quote-unquote celebrate, they released a firmware update, but it's nothing all that special. But, now, neither of you were day one purchasers, right? I think you got it like a year later, Scott?
Yes, about a year later as a birthday present, and got Breath of the Wild with it, and have been enjoying it ever since.
And TJ, you didn't buy it on launch, but you did get it the same year.
No, I got it on launch.
Oh, you did? Okay. So on this day, 3 years ago, you got your Switch.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been getting any use out of it lately?
Yeah, I still play games on it. I still have I have Smash Bros. On it with all the DLC. Hollow Knight is on there. I like playing Hollow Knight on the Switch more than I like playing it on PC because I can take it with me, and that mm-hmm. is a very digestible game to take with you.
It's funny, I'm playing. There are some games which I prefer to play on PC. And others I prefer to play on the Xbox, but finding that a lot of games that are on both, I'm playing on the PC because it's Xbox Anywhere and I still get my achievements, which isn't actually true for one other game, which I'm going to be talking about when we talk about what we've been playing. The other thing is I decided, you know what, screw it, I'll just apply for E3. I checked today's news, and every single news item was that ESA's planning to go through, despite coronavirus, with E3, which tells me, well, you know what, this probably won't happen then. If they have to keep telling people, yeah, we're going to go on, don't worry. It's only going to get worse before it gets better. So, and the reason why that's a big question right now is that a lot of people have pulled out of GDC, and there's questions of whether GDC will go on at all.
GDC has already been postponed.
Oh, okay. But, Microsoft is still doing virtual panels. So, and they have to do these panels because the Xbox Series X is coming out, and they need to have these panels. So they're doing it virtually. They're going to stream it instead. You were saying, TJ?
Oh, I was going to say that GDC, the last they said, they were postponing the show, and they were going to go for summertime, and they're going to be releasing details here in the next couple weeks. I'm hoping for an E3 GDC blood match.
It's not going to happen. GDC, well, see, here's the thing. For those of you who don't know, E3 is going to be on June 7th through 9th. However, that's kind of a lie because, for me, all of E3 is the 2 days before when everybody has their conferences. Although Sony's not going to have a conference and Nintendo's not going to have a conference, Microsoft will have a conference. You'll probably see some third-party developers. I haven't checked yet. I'm willing to bet you anything that Bethesda will have one because they're desperate and they need some good news. You know, they've been working hard on Fallout 76, but, you know, they have games that are coming out, like Doom, which they need to rock the house.
Yeah, Doom Eternal is coming out. I think it's, it's
March 20th. Well, actually, then it won't be at 83. But it's coming out.
It's literally at just a couple weeks away, actually.
The thing is that, I'm wondering. Then there's the announcement last E3 of Elder Scrolls 6, which I don't think will be. But if Bethesda has something, they have to show something about it. They have to say something about it. They probably just started on it last year, you know. But it'd be nice to have some information about it, what Elder Scrolls 6 might be like, and see if they can break from the pattern of the past Elder Scrolls, because I think people are ready for something new. Not
definitely not something new and improved.
Yeah, not outrageously new, just something like a much better NPC system. Because if there's one thing that's always been, the NPCs in Elder Scrolls have sucked, except for, I think Daggerfall, but only because Daggerfall had Gwent, because they were so, because the game is so primitive. So, you know. But yeah, they really need to improve the NPCs. And I'm, the only problem with the Elder Scrolls 6 is that the Elder Scrolls Online still exists. I think that's actually a good thing, because you won't see a Fallout 76 then version of Elder Scrolls, because they already have that with an MMO. So we'll see. I wonder if Rockstar is going to say anything about a Grand Theft Auto 6. I mean, the Xbox Series X and the PlayStation 5 are going to be coming out this holiday, so, you know, having it come out next year might be, and Rockstar has been good about hiding projects and announcing them like a year before and generating some excitement. So I guess the question of this week is going to be, what are you hoping for in terms of announcements at E3, assuming there is one? DJ?
I'm hoping E3 dies and GDC takes its place.
What are you hoping for announcements with E3?
I already told you. I already told you what I'm hoping for.
In terms of games.
There is nothing I'm hoping for more than E3's death.
Okay, in terms of games.
Wow. I thought Jonah was going to be the dark and gloomy one.
Well, here's the thing. I don't care, but I do care about news.
I do care when people leak the home addresses and phone numbers of my friends and colleagues. It doesn't affect me as much, but it affects a lot of other people, and I don't think I'll ever get over that.
Well, I wouldn't know. I haven't gone to E3 in the past 2 years because they don't want me.
Yeah, they super fucked up last year real hard, and that ain't going away anytime soon.
What games are you looking forward to, then, for announcement period? That isn't already been announced.
Yeah.
Tunic? Tunic, I think.
That's already been announced. I mean, I think in that case you're hoping for a release date.
Yeah.
I think didn't they already give a vague release date on Tunic?
Something, yeah, vague.
If Rockstar is going to do something new, I don't think it's going to be Grand Theft Auto, because they're still making a shit ton of money off of Grand Theft Auto Online, and I think it's too soon to do something new, unless maybe they do like a Nightmare DLC with Red Dead Redemption 2. But my bigger hope is that they finally return to the Bully series and finally announce Bully 2.
Yeah, I think Paul would be saying yes, 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 yes. last news about Tunic was back at PAX South, and they still don't have a real release date for it.
No, not yet. They've had a bunch of playable versions, but no. They're in the same boat
Tunic
as
looks different, by the way. It has a more cartoony feel now.
Yeah, it does. Tunic has kind of been in the same boat as another one, Streets of Rage 4, which like is coming along. They're announcing new stuff all the time, but they still don't have like an official release date for Streets of Rage 4. Which I've played the game like several times. It's incredibly fun, but it's got to take a lot of time to put all those like hand drawn animations together.
The other thing, a game that's being is it this year? Anyways, We discussed it last week. That podcast got bombed, but there's a lot about Baldur's Gate 3. And now there's a minor controversy among fans that it's going to be turn-based only and not pausable real-time, like all other Baldur's Gates have been. And they just released the gameplay video, I think, yesterday.
It was a few days ago. It was on the 27th.
No, that was the trailer. I'm talking about actual gameplay.
Well,
They did last Thursday at PAX East. They showed an entire gameplay reveal.
Right, and I forgot his name again. The Larian head guy was playing it, and it there were some bugs, but there was also some critical failures of his of dice rolling, of you like accidentally stabbed his companion, and he got a party wipe, and then of course the game glitched out, and it wouldn't let him progress further into the game. As far as the whole turn-based thing, I'm fine with it, because I always thought D&D should be turn-based, and the real time with pause always felt very jarring, because the characters would be yelling and talking, and you would hit pause.
The problem is that Baldur's Gate fans are used to that, and you have combat resolving automatically. You don't have one go, then you go, then I go, then you go.
Yeah, so, I always felt that with the real-time pause that I was missing turns or messing them up, because if you don't, if you put a new action in when they were already in the middle of another action, or just, you just keep, I just felt like it was not as smooth as it could be.
It uses Dungeons & Dragons initiative. I mean,
right.
That's how you know who goes when.
Well, no, in turn-based, that works fine.
In pausable real play, because it just determines how often that character attacks. Once every
For instance, I'll be like, "Oh crap, I need a heal," and my cleric's in the middle of an attack swing, and I tell him to heal, and I'm sitting there waiting and waiting, and the bandit's sitting there hacking at him, like, "Why aren't you healing?" So I don't
Isn't
know.
Isn't that your fault?
I have no idea. That's the fucking point, Jonah. In the turn base, I would know. It's like, okay, I can see the order. My cleric's going to go third, so I have to plan ahead to heal like I do in Final Fantasy games.
Well, but it's like real life, you know. You thought you were going to do one thing, and oh shit, I have to...
I have to immediately change.
Yeah, everybody plays Baldur's Gate because it's just like real life.
Thank you, TJ.
Here's the thing. Larian does things their way, and it's basically they're using the Divinity Original Sin engine. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I know for a lot of people it's not a deal breaker, though.
There are things I really do like. I like the, I guess if he picked up a shoe and threw it at someone, and he also can climb up things around him. So it's like the environment feels very real, and the characters feel like they're in the environment, as opposed to just walking on some board and there's no, you can highlight a chest to open, but it doesn't really feel like that chest is there, if that makes sense. It's like,
like a Divinity Original Sin game?
Yeah, it is. I just don't know if I like the whole first-person dialogue, but I guess I'll get used to it.
That's fine. I mean, it's not combat, and, it's nice to be able to see characters. I'm just wondering if you'll be able to customize your own.
I think so.
It kind of looked like they gave you some templates.
Yes.
And then I do believe that I saw a button where you can just, make your own type of character.
I think they do, origin characters like they did in Divinity 2, where you have, like you said, templates, and there was a vampire rogue and some other characters. Githyanki. I thought Githyanki was supposed to be ugly, and, they made her look kind of nice, so... That was interesting. The game looks promising, once they get the bugs fixed.
There's a lot of verticality in that game, and it's really cool how they're doing that. At one point, he just, shoves a halfling off of a balcony, and it's hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
there's also just, there's spells like Featherfall, which make it so that you can jump from high places without hurting yourself.
Right.
And they make a lot of use of that in the demo. Like they jump from what has to be a 10-story castle gate down to a valley below, and it's just it's interesting how much verticality they have in there, and even just the demo map of their world, mm-hmm. which makes me wonder just how much there's going to be in the full campaign.
That reminds me, because in a game, when you're actually doing the tabletop, of Dungeons & Dragons, there are some spells that are extremely important. Like Featherfall is one of them because the DM will say, oh, you're at the edge of a cliff. And I say, I'm going to use Featherfall and just jump down 50 feet to get away from them. Mostly in a video game, Featherfall is useless because there's no – because, you know, for a long time there was no – I mean, would you ever need to use Featherfall in a gold box game?
No. Yeah, that's true.
You know, something like – and that was one of the complaints about Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines is that they did have some skills like Celerity – not Celerity, the other Auspex. And you could do it in Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines, but it was useless.
That's a good point about bringing up the gold box games, because I never felt like rogues did anything other than backstab in the gold box games. You couldn't pickpocket anyone that wasn't really stealth.
Usually once you gave a bow and arrow and said, okay, have at it.
Yeah, it was just very – a lot of the characters just didn't have their abilities. Like the fighters and wizards were the only ones that – or clerics had anything extra to do, and it was just these utilitary abilities just weren't there in the gold box game. So, and they, but they were in Baldur's Gate, and I'm sure Larian is going to make it even more so now with their Baldur's Gate. And I just hope we see a certain ranger.
That's how I tested Dungeons and Dragons Online, is I took the role of a thief because I wanted to see how I was going to deal with a thief.
Mm-hmm.
And they managed to make it sort of useful because you need someone to open up that chest, you know.
Right. Yes.
And aside from, and there was a lot of places where you had to be able to sneak around. And the other only use for them in gold box games is I think some of the latter ones allow you to, you know, find all those secret doors, and they had mm-hmm. to include so many secret doors that the thief didn't feel useless.
Right.
I do love how much they're leaning. Like, I know the game is based on D&D, and I know that the rule sets have always been there, but, like, it kind of feels like they're leaning into it that much harder this time around. And
yes.
And what I mean by that is, like, you literally roll a dice for everything. There was a moment where, you're alone and you're about to go to sleep, and you have, like, some dialogue options of thoughts that you can go through. And you literally have a dice roll, and there's a dice roll in that moment as to like whether or not those thoughts like come up with anything worthwhile.
But here's the thing about die rolling. In a tabletop game, when you're playing tabletop, DM will make a die roll, and he's like, "Fuck it, I'm not gonna pay attention to the die roll." I'm hoping that at some point they allow you to have like a certain amount of mulligans. Or have a lot of bonuses depending on your situation, which I think is a better thing. Like, if you're in a situation which a thief can't lose, it's like, really shouldn't be able to lose. It's like, there should be bonuses that add to the dice. Because, you know what this reminds me of a little bit? Oh, XCOM says you have a 95% chance to hit that alien. It's a berserker, and he's towering over you, and you somehow missed with your shotgun.
Yeah, that does suck, but it does seem to be something people were actually enjoying seeing is failures at just the most kind of ridiculous moments. And the fact that you could turn on turn base at any time, it seems like, and they were talking about the Larian guy going through a burning wreckage in 6 seconds with turn base, I guess, turned on.
I think the only thing that would entertain me is that if they had special things happen when you had a natural 3.
Well.
Or a natural 1, depending on the number of dice you're rolling. I want to see what they do with critical failures.
Yeah, they. I don't think we saw like a serious critical failure outside of combat in the demo we saw. But Scott's right about the turn-based thing. One aspect of it is that when you turn on turn-based, you have 6 seconds to move your character and perform actions, and then the world, and then you freeze up, and the world around you moves 6 seconds in response to whatever you did.
Just like real life.
Yes.
Because I think chess has spoiled us because so. Let's get on to what have you been playing? And there was another news item which I'm trying to remember if I'm something major that happened which I didn't put in the notes. I'm probably gonna think of it later. what have you been playing, TJ?
I've been playing the holy heck out of Grand Blue Fantasy Versus, which is a fighting game from...
I'm not surprised that's a fighting game. It's a weird title. Let me guess, it's by Arc System Works or the guys who did Skullgirls or...
It's by Arc System Works. it's a collaboration between Arc System Works and Cygames, who make a mobile RPG called Grand Blue Fantasy. And it's one of those types where, like, it's a gacha game where you like basically can draw certain characters or weapons to use on your RPG. Except they like take basically a whole bunch of different characters from that universe and made them into a fighting game. It is beautiful. It is like basically Guilty Gear Xrd quality beautiful with a lot of fun characters, a lot of fun styles. And they did an interesting thing with like the fighting moves where you have like technical inputs, like your normal quarter circle forwards to launch a fireball. But they also mapped them to like a skill button to where you don't have to put in the technical inputs. You can put either like just hit the skill button without pressing a direction, or press forward skill button, backward skill button, down skill button, and it'll do a different move. And the trade-off is that there's cooldowns on the character moves, and it'll take a little bit longer for them to come back if you use the skill button. But I think it's an extremely cool thing to like give that kind of accessibility to players that may not be good at putting in technical inputs. I feel like fighting games are getting to a point where like developers recognize just how hard they are to get into and how like high the barrier of entry can be. And in response to that, they're doing things like this where they're just like including accessible options that allow people that just haven't been in there for a long time, haven't done all that stuff, can still enjoy it, still do the moves that the characters have without basically having to learn everything that everybody else has been doing for years.
How about you, Scott?
I've been playing Yoshi's Crafted World with my daughter.
Really? That's an old one.
Yeah, but it means... still on the Switch, and it's new to me. It's a platformer game where you pick a Yoshi to play as, and it's a lot like Yoshi's Island, but without the crying Mario. And you're out to collect the Infinity Stones, I mean Sun Stones, and there's five of them. And you're making your way through the game using the eggs to throw at objects and collect them, or you know, knock out shy guys. And it's a very easy platformer.
Yeah. It's one of those games in which you have you and you have your kid and you play together like it's a Lego game.
Mm-hmm. And
I'm just trying to figure out why relaxing. There's black goop in it and what that's supposed to represent, because the entire game is based around crafting, so there's yarn and all that stuff, but they have black goop. What is that supposed to be? Like when you accidentally dropped your knitting into an oil slick?
I don't think I've seen black goop. I saw water at one point that looked like it was purple or poisonous, I guess.
Yeah, that's it. It becomes goop.
Okay, well, Yoshi couldn't swim in that, so... but there's also, you could play the levels backwards when you get the little dogs, and you can go and hunt them, and they're hiding. It's like a little hide and seek with dogs, and you get extra, flowers, and, you could get coins. When you get enough coins, you can, buy costumes, which act as armor for the Yoshi, making the game even easier.
If I remember correctly, you build up your house, buy furniture and stuff.
Okay.
Or am I thinking of Kirby's Epic Yarn?
I think you're thinking of Little Big Planet.
No. It's a Kirby's Epic Yarn, that's right. Kirby's Epic Yarn is the one in which you build up your apartment building.
Yeah, you don't have a house. You're too busy going through the island trying to collect the crystals to restore your sunstone thing that Kamek went and stole. So, yeah, that's what you're combating in this with a bunch of Yoshis. You can pick a Yoshi of your favorite color. And
have you played Kirby's Epic Yarn?
I have not.
Okay, it's far better. It's far better a game than Yoshi's Crafted World. I seriously just... And it's the kind of, it has the same player co-op as well. And it's easy, but it's also... But there are some small challenges that make it fun. yeah, it's a better game. I mean, Yoshi's Crafted World is fine, but it always felt like a time waster more than a game. Kirby's Epic Yarn is you should try that game. It's you'll appreciate it. And to be honest, the graphics, even though it's an older game, are better.
I was actually looking at Ark of Alchemists, I think it is, where you're in a desert and you're rebuilding like a city or civilization or whatever. I'm looking at that game next for the Switch. But I'll look at Kirby's Yarn, Epic Yarn as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot better game, trust me. TJ will appreciate this. I've started playing Dead Cells, and it's now my jam. it was on Xbox Game Pass, and I kept on thinking, I keep on hearing good things about it. It's supposed to be like a 2D Dark Souls, and basically the name sort of gives that away, Dead Cells, Dark Souls. But, no, it's not like Dark Souls at all, at least not to me, because... Yeah, you have to do some tactics, but it's not. It's basically a revamped Castlevania, and it's a roguelike with varying dungeons. You know, every time you die, it rearranges itself. But there's also a sense of progression because you keep on unlocking weapons and shields and bows and all that stuff. And last time I played, I got such a devastating combo that I was just going through it, beating the crap out of everything, you know. And yeah, I've been really enjoying Dead Cells. Did you play Dead Cells, teacher?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, well, not of course. I mean, this game made me uninstall SteamWorld Dig 2 because they're similar in certain ways. So yeah, I mean, Dead Cells is now my unwindy, you know, play 30 minutes, see how far I can get sort of game. And I have it both on Xbox and on PC, and they have separate achievements. So I have to play both versions. I've been playing mostly on PC. I've also, since it's landed on Xbox Game Pass, I've also been playing Overcooked 2. And I have to say, after World 1, yeah, don't play single player. It has to be co-op. Playing single player in Overcooked 2... is like playing Brothers, Tale of Two Sons, except it's like playing Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons, except they also want you to... it's like playing it with... You need four hands, not two. I'll put it that way. Because I've seen people play Overcooked. I mean, I played the first one a little bit. I really enjoy it. For those who don't know what Overcooked is... you have two chefs, and you have to coordinate in making dishes. Like, one of you will grab a tomato and start chopping it up and then put it in a fryer. Another one will take the pasta and put it in a pot and boil it. And then you combine the dishes inside of, you know, you combine the ingredients in a dish, and then you have to serve it, and then someone has to wash the dishes. And then more and more complicated dishes come out that require three or four ingredients. And a lot of the game is just being able to coordinate with the other chef. To get when you're playing that single player on one controller, that's a pain. Have either of you played Overcooked?
Yes, I have played it on the Switch, yeah. And you do have to coordinate with the other players that you're playing with and plan it out to do, I think, an efficient meal delivery.
Then you know how annoying it is to play that single player.
Yeah, it's overwhelming.
Because you have to keep on swapping between chefs, and the problem is, while you can leave a chef to cook or chop by himself and go to the next player, you still need... And a lot of the levels in level 2 and beyond will contrive it so that you have to throw ingredients to the other side, and you won't have access... Only one chef will have access to ingredients, and it just gets too hectic, and you have to multitask so badly... That it's like, no, 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 I just want to play this co-op with someone else. It's
yeah.
Made for co-op.
It is, definitely. And it feels better playing together, so yeah.
And I've also gotten back into Ape Out. And for those who don't know what Ape Out is, it's the top-down thing in which you play an ape and you're trying to escape. And you're taking people with guns and grabbing them and beating them into a bloody mess. But since you're an ape and you don't have a gun... And the music is just stellar. I don't... TJ, you've played Ape Out, right?
Yes.
Okay. The music is what really makes that game. I mean, the top-down grainy look to it is also really nice, but just the jazz drum percussion makes it so sweet.
And you get the cymbal and trumpet stings whenever you kill somebody. It's like you mash somebody against the wall, just goes, wow!
Yeah.
It's really fun.
I've gotten to the point in which you can toss people out the window and they just plummet to their death. Yeah, for those of you who haven't played Ape Out, do it. It's a Devolver Digital game, and that should tell you all you need to know about the game. It's a Devolver Digital game. As Yahti once said, if it wasn't a Devolver Digital game, Devolver would have swung into the window like a pirate and kidnapped it and claimed it for its own. And I don't know if you – was it there when we were – no. See, Devolver has their anti-E3 thing, and they do it in the parking lot. And one of the games they were doing was Ape Out, but I don't think you were there. Or maybe you were. Was it Ape Out that was on the thing, or was it that game with the balls with hands?
I don't think that either of those games – I know which one you're talking about with the balls with hands, but –
the Pikachu or something.
But I don't think either of those games were on deck when I was there for E3.
Yeah, the only thing I remember is that we were playing Absolver with each other.
I remember beer and I remember a card game.
Oh yeah, that was the not the Fable game. And what was it?
Gwent.
It was Gwent. I think it was Gwent. I'm not sure.
It was like an off-brand Gwent.
Yeah. Yeah. I also had installed Witcher 3, and the reason for that is that the characters feel floaty. They sort of glide on the screen, and there's just something that takes me out of the game. When the characters are floaty, and like when you run, they sort of break out on a run that's just feels unnatural, basically kills the game for me, because I felt like I was playing on ice skates.
I love The Witcher 3, but there was one moment that like took me out of the game, and I almost couldn't take it seriously for like the next 2 weeks. You die real quickly from – it seems like – if I remember correctly, it doesn't take too much to die from fall damage in that game. Like falling something like 5 to 7 feet will kill you. I fell off of a cliff, and I swear to God, Geralt did the Wilhelm scream.
Oh, God.
And – it never happened again except for that one time, but it was so jarring that I just laughed my ass off for like the next 15 minutes crying, and it was really hard to take Geralt seriously for a little bit after that.
Consider yourself lucky. What if he had done the Goofy scream?
I don't know.
For those who don't know, the Wilhelm scream is a scream that's been inserted into, well, for one thing, in every Star Wars film, but it's been inserted in everything else, and it's just a big, ah! You'll know it when you hear it.
It is. If you look up like Wilhelm scream Star Wars supercut, it is quite a time.
Yeah, and here's the problem. Sometimes they use the Wilhelm scream in the most inappropriate moments when it should be a serious scene.
Like when Geralt falls off of a tower.
Oh, that's one. Although Geralt falling off a tower because you screwed up with your controller is still in what's it called? But anyway, yeah. There are stock screams, and Wilhelm scream is one of them. The Goofy scream is another one. There's another one. I forgot the name of it. That's been used a lot. So, yeah. I mean, that's kind of weird. The other game that's on Game Pass, which I plan to play, I don't have time for it yet, is Yakuza 0. I heard that it is a good game to start in the series. I mean, it's the sixth game in the series, basically. Because 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and that's not including the zombie game. I don't know which one that was for. Was it for 4, I think? The Yakuza zombie one? Was it like a spinoff?
I don't remember. I do remember the zombie thing, but I don't remember what Yakuza
it's
in.
Yeah, it was a spinoff. I'm not counting it as part of the series. So the Yakuza has been 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 0, 6. So I heard that 0 is a good entry point So, and 1 and 2 are coming to Game Pass. So I think Microsoft thinks the same way, or at least Square Enix does. Or no, it's Konami who does Yakuza. And yeah, I mean, maybe they think Americans are too stupid and all think Zero came first. But yeah, at least you get Kazuma Kiryu's origin story.
Yes. There's that, and then there's the other guy with the eye patch. He's fun, too. Goro.
Goro Majima.
Mm-hmm.
Although I hear in 6... So here's the thing about Yakuza. It plays things both seriously and batshit crazy. And I'm not talking about in terms of some of the side... Here's the thing. In Yakuza 6... There's an internet chat mini game in which you're chatting up women on your computer, and you just watch a very serious-faced Kiryu chatting up women and talking about how nice their breasts are and all that. It's just it's just bizarre. Then there's another one, I think it's still 6 as well, in which he has to take care of a baby. And these mini games just have you throwing this baby around.
Yeah, the Yakuza games are silly as shit. When they get super serious, and then they also do things like that.
And then you have at the drop of a hat, Kiryu will rip off his shirt to show he's built as a brick shit house, and he'll take a park bench and just swing it around and hit everybody with it. Or even better yet, he'll take a bicycle and beat people over the head with it.
I mean, at this point, everybody has to have seen the GIF of the QuickTime event where Kiryu answers the phone, but like very dramatically.
The most normal things he plays so seriously, no matter how goofy it is, like when he dresses up in a Barney costume and has to entertain children.
Yes.
And I remember Yahtzee Croshaw saying, it's funny because it is Kazuma Kiryu, and this is a guy who 5 minutes ago made everybody at a business meeting piss their pants because he raised his eyebrow 1 centimeter.
You know what? I just realized something. Yakuza is what people wanted Saints Row to continue to be.
Well, in Saints Row, don't you – well, I mean, Saints Row just went – batshit, even more batshit crazy, and went into outer space and went into heaven and hell and all that stuff.
Saints Row jumped the shark.
I don't know. I mean, Saints Row jumped the shark, but it didn't jump the shark. It just jumped into the kiddie pool of wackiness. It was like Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon, except the entire game.
Yeah. Yakuza 6 is going to be an RPG. It's actually
was already released. What are you talking about?
Oh yeah. Well, it's a turn-based RPG.
Whatever Yakuza 7 is going to be.
Is this Yakuza 6 or Yakuza 7? Let me make sure in that.
No, Yakuza 7 just released their trailer at TGS.
You are right. Yakuza 7 is going to be a turn-based RPG, which it's going to still be like gangsters and in Japan. But it's going to be, like, all RPG mechanics to the point where, like, there are summons in the game of Yakuza characters, and the main character summons them by whipping out his phone and calling their number, and then they come in with some fucking bombastic animation and attack enemies.
I'm just hoping Yakuza Online comes out. Well... Because what that game needs to be is just having people acting just outrageously in front of other people. I don't even know if it came out or not. I think it did come out 2 years ago. But I want to see a real Yakuza MMO. The possibilities are endless.
Go ahead.
But anyways, yeah. For those of you frustrated with Grand Theft Auto, Yakuza is what Grand Theft Auto thinks it is.
Yeah, I stand by what I said. It's like if Saints Row was still good.
Here's the thing. Grand Theft Auto 5, it was trying to be Yakuza by having over-the-top characters and just failing miserably because it didn't take its characters seriously. I mean, well, maybe Michael a little bit, and But the other, I don't know. It's, although I will say this, you know what? In the game, I really liked Michael because while he was making fun of his ex-wife doing yoga, it seemed to me like a real character development that when she was gone, he decided, you know what, this yoga stuff is actually pretty good. And I would have him doing yoga, not just for the stat increase, but just because it fit his character to me. Like, here's this hardcore ex-mob guy who's performing these huge heists and all that stuff, extremely violent stuff, and then at the end of the day, he just goes home and does yoga. Which his wife accused him of not being able to do. His ex-wife, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, so yeah, I'll probably play Yakuza 0 at some point. I don't think I'll be disappointed. Grand Theft Auto already did that for me. Here's the other thing. Grand Theft Auto, I mean, Saints Row 2, I was really having fun with Saints Row 2. And then my character started doing shit which I did not approve of. And it was sort of like, why am I doing this? Yeah. I mean, he's not only doing, he's doing cruel stuff to people who don't deserve it. And it's like, what the fuck? And it just made me not like the character, my character anymore.
Yeah. Like, I think the series peaked at Saints Row 3, in my opinion. Like, Saints Row 3 at least had an interesting story and like, progress about it. But, yeah, I can see where you're coming from on Saints Row 2.
Irritates the fuck out of me, and it's a little thing. But for some reason, Volition really thinks Johnny Gat is an awesome character.
Ugh. Yeah.
What the fuck is their obsession with Johnny Gat? He's an idiot, and I don't like playing as him, and they had an entire game revolve around him with the title Gat Out of Hell.
Mm-hmm.
It's just... And then I played, their game in which they, Agency? You know the game I'm talking about.
Agents of Mayhem.
Right, Agents of Mayhem. And they fucking had to squeeze Gat into that, too.
Yes.
Although I will like the fact that in Saints Row 4, they actually managed to get Keith David back. He just played himself. Keith David is too good a voice actor not to have in your game. And which is their fault for having having the main player kill Julius.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing. Killing Julius was the least offensive thing to me, and it was still sort of offensive. They were not letting me play the character that I wanted to play. I mean, you know, in Red Dead Redemption 1 and 2, you could play John Marston or Arthur as real assholes, as real violent assholes, but you could also play them as people trying to be better. In Saints Row, you don't... In Saints Row 1, you were just some guy off the street who happened to be in the middle of a drive-by.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I liked about it. You were nobody, and you joined the gang because, you know, you needed them. And then you just became the godfather. And it's like, I'm out. I don't care. I did like the fact that I always had my guy play the guy with a really big Cockney accent. That was or Australian accent. And I liked the fact they allowed you to pick your voice. So I had this guy with a heavy Australian accent just... all his commentary.
Mm-hmm.
I think your character was voiceless in the first game. I mean, he did have some lines, but basically he didn't say that much. Anyway, we've been talking too much about this. We're not even going to go into the gaming flashback, which is blur. We did it last week. We'll talk about it next week. We're going to move on to the next... we're going to move on to the news item, so go ahead, TJ.
Bloodstained's roguelike mode has been canceled from PC Gamer. Bloodstained's Koji Igarashi's Castlevania callback launched last year after a successful Kickstarter, which included a stretch goal for a roguelike mode. Now it looks like the team overpromised, leading it to shelving the mode in favor of a randomizer. It's been 5 years since Bloodstained hit Kickstarter, so the news that the mode won't be materializing is a little bit late. According to a Kickstarter update from Igarashi, the code that was created early in the game's development is not currently compatible with this type of gameplay. Given that this incompatibility has always existed, backers don't appear to be too pleased that they're only hearing about it now. I wish I was surprised by the cancellation of such a prominent stretch goal, but I'm not, writes one backer. Unfortunately, from the explanation given, I can only conclude that you never intended to fulfill the promise. That's pretty cool how the code for the game isn't compatible with a roguelike mode, writes another. When the campaign with the stretch goal was finished before the game began production. Some backers seem to be pleased that they're being given an alternative, but disappointment is the prevailing tone of the response. Randomizer mode lets you play the story campaign with up to 8 game parameters, which are randomized as you kill your way through the game. There's a timer, and you can share your seed, so you can challenge people to beat your run. Seed being just like basically the instance that you have of your version of the game.
Yeah, here's the thing. Whenever you talk about a computer having a random, it's never random. Basically, when you want to do a random number of computer, what it does is it looks at the clock and takes the random seed from the clock. So, because there is no such thing as randomness, you know, computers can't roll dice, let's put it that way. They pick a random number, but it's always going to be the same if it's the same seed. So when you want to do a random and they have that in Dead Cells, by the way. You can input the seed so you can play the exact same game over and over and over again if you want to.
They have that in Chasm as well.
Yep, it's also in Eagle Island. A lot of roguelikes, a lot of games that claim to be roguelike have a seed version of some kind.
They have it in, Slay the Spire as well.
The new randomizer mode will launch alongside the Zangetsu update, which unlocks a new playable character and will be free for all players. Both are due out this year.
So, I'm of two minds of this. One, Bloodstained has gotten universally praised. You know, so it's not like players are getting dicked. They got the game and it's fun. On the other hand, you know, this is one of the dangers of doing a Kickstarter, is that I think I mentioned this before, but most games never come out. The developer will have an idea for a game, they'll work on it 3 months, and they'll say, this isn't working, and players will never know about it. I mean, the only reason why we knew about Sid Meier's Dinosaurs is because Sid Meier had a developer diary and he talked about it. But his attitude was, you know, his attitude is, if it's not fun, I'm not going to bother.
It did happen in Pillars of Eternity as well, not to quite to this degree, but they developed characters early on in the first game and said, okay, these are going to be the characters you're going to see, and here's their stories, and then suddenly they're just scrapped and other characters are put in their place. And I had felt disappointment at that, but it's, you know, it was, I think it was based because the writers creating those characters left, and a different writer came in and created different characters. And so, you know, it's like you said, that some stuff gets scrapped, and sometimes it's a lot of stuff can get scrapped and you don't even realize that.
But here's the problem now. When you run a Kickstarter campaign, you can't scrap a bad idea. You have to finish the bad idea.
Yeah.
You'll discover through it's not quite working, you know. I think, look at Mighty No. 9. I'm wondering, had they never done a Kickstarter campaign for it and instead, well, it would never happen without the Kickstarter campaign, but let's say he started working on it and he said, this isn't working, so. People would never knew, there never would have never known that there was a Mega Man update, you know, or a different version of Mega Man. But since you promised that you have to release it, no matter what.
Yeah, if you put something down in writing, you better damn well be sure that it's feasible. Like, the fact of the matter is that it was a stretch goal. It was a stretch goal for people that put money into it. And, like, how are you going to put something on your page that's a stretch goal if it's...
Let's ask people about Project Phoenix.
If it's just not even possible.
But in that case, they're not even getting the game at all, where at least you got Bloodstained. You have the game. It's just one feature apparently is not going to be in it, and it's going to be different. So it's you know, disappointing, but at least you have the game.
Well, here's the thing about randomizer. I mean, one of the things about a roguelike is that you're randomizing the dungeon. Basically, what they're doing here is instead of randomizing the levels, they're just randomizing the monsters.
Yes. And, like, I can only imagine that the issue that they're having is that, like, the dungeons are not modular enough to be randomized. So you probably have instances where, like, you have two pieces of a dungeon that are just showing up next to each other. They're just completely incompatible. Like,
which will make me appreciate Dead Cells a little bit more. By the way, in Dead Cells, I noticed that there are – their answer to that is – instead of it's modular in quotation marks, but huge chunks are modular.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, the whole thing is, like, the biomes and the monsters that are contained within those biomes. And and also the items that those monsters drop. It's really cool how they do that.
Because here's the thing, when it's not just a matter of randomizing the level, right? You could do that easily with a game like Moria. The thing is, in that kind of game, and in Dead Cells, you need to have an equal difficulty and reward. And if you randomize it too much, you'll have sometimes a level will be way, way, way too easy, or you'll have a level that's impossible to complete. You have to have it so that people get the same reward and the same, you know, and the same maneuverability, and you have to make sure that they have places to go. Make sure you don't accidentally trap someone someplace, and they can't get out, or they can't progress. You know, so there's a lot more to than randomizing the level, what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was one of the things about Hellgate London, was that was a roguelike, and they had to randomize it, and their solution was just to take big chunks and just randomize chunks instead of individual levels. So. You were about to say, TJ?
Oh, it's like, I'm just imagining, like, what they probably tried to do with Bloodstained, and it just comes out in my head looking like a fucked up Castlevania Tetris, like a bad a bad Tetris game.
It probably was looking really bad, and it's one of those things that might have looked that they thought was going to work, and then once it executed, it was looking really bad, like you said.
But here's the thing. The problem isn't that it didn't work. From what I gather, the problem is it didn't work when they launched a Kickstarter campaign and they promised a stretch goal knowing it wasn't going to work.
Yeah, that is
right.
The issue.
That, yeah. They built it from the beginning. Like, they built a problem into their game is what basically happened that now keeps them from being able to pursue that goal that they promised.
But anyways, Bloodstained is great. If you like Castlevania, Symphony of the Night, that's basically it. The only difference is that when you pick up stuff, you can actually see it on your character.
Mm-hmm. There's also 8-bit versions of Bloodstained that were released alongside the full-blown version. There's one that's like straight up like Castlevania 3, where you pick up characters along the way that have different capabilities to them. I love it. It's very good.
I mean, if you didn't back it, you don't care. just buy it and enjoy it. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Xbox Series X and PS5 to come with Pro variants, and this comes to us from Notebook Check. It wasn't too long ago that Microsoft threw down the gauntlet by offering some details about the Xbox Series X. One of the standout specs was the 12 teraflops of compute performance linked with the next-gen console's GPU. We actually talked about this last week when they actually announced it. However, according to a NeoGAF member called VFX Veteran, the XSX, see, that's never going to work, because people are just going to say XXX, was actually the top-end version, and there will be a lower-spec base model. In fact, the alleged industry professional stated that there will be a base and a pro version of both the SXX. You know, it's easier to say the Xbox Series X than that, and there's only one more syllable when I say Xbox. That's five syllables. Those five syllables are easy to do than those three syllables and the PS5. In regards to the PS5, it seems the base model will offer a decent GPU compute performance of 9 teraflops, which means the Pro's variant power will probably be quite close to the figure Microsoft stated recently for the Xbox Series X. The same vetted NeoGAF member also claims that the base and Pro consoles will likely be released at the same time, thus allowing them to enjoy a full life cycle and giving gamers a wider choice come holiday 2020. Rumors about a PS5 Pro have come and gone over the past few months, but this latest news gives some refreshed credibility to the idea that Sony will release two consoles. Unsurprisingly, the Pro variants of the PS5 and the Xbox Series X will be more expensive than their base counterparts. VFX Veteran has guessed around $600 for the top-end models, which would make sense if the base models were going to stay under the $500 mark. The last time a system was released at two SKUs with one $500 and the other $600, that was the PS3. Now, I hate to interrupt the article, but on the other hand, that was also like over 10 years ago, so there is inflation. No figure has been given for the amount of teraflops performance the PS5 Pro will offer users, but many rumors have settled around a figure of 12 teraflops, which means that the next-gen console will be perfectly matched. Sorry. No figure has been given for the amount of the teraflops performance the PS5 Pro will offer users, but many rumors have settled around the figure of 12 teraflops, which would mean that the next-gen console will be perfectly matched to rival the Xbox Series X Pro in the specific detail, at least. So, the only problem I see here is that we already discussed this 2 weeks ago. The PS5 is going to have exclusive games from the first party, and by that I mean the PS5 games are not going to be released for the PS4, meaning Sony's going to force people to upgrade their system. While the Xbox Series X, everything that's going to be released for it is going to also be released for PC and the Xbox One. Meaning that Microsoft's saying, well, you know, you don't have to upgrade right away. They also stated that everything will be forward compatible, meaning that if you bought, say, Halo Infinite on the Xbox One or the Windows version, it'll be waiting for you on the new console when you finally decide to buy it. So that's going to be the main difference, and it'll be interesting to see how people react. I don't know if either console is going to be selling all that well, but in Microsoft's case, I don't think they care if it sells super well because they're trying to sell the Game Pass more than they are trying to sell a new console.
Yeah, I wish Sony would be as customer friendly as Microsoft has been. This whole being forced to upgrade every time they come out with a console, and then no backwards compatibility to previous games. I don't really see myself wanting to buy or needing to buy a PlayStation 5.
Well, it's not no backwards compatibility. It's more like it's only for the PS5. We're not releasing it for the PS4. So it's right. It's not backwards compatibility. It's more like only the new system gets it.
Right.
Now, you can be sure that the games will take full advantage of the system. I mean, but on the other hand, you had the Order 1886 taking full advantage of the system just because it's. Remember when it used to be that first party games used to mean this is going to be so good, we're selling our console with it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, the Xbox One had Rise, which was eh, and the Order 1886 was ew, and, oh, God, what was the name of that game that was sort of like, I forgot the name of that game with the character that just keeps getting bigger and bigger because he's made of stuff. It was sort of like they were trying to do their version of Tamagotchi. Oh, Knack. Knack was bad.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'm probably going to buy the Xbox Series X Pro because I'm a tool. I had to have the Project Scarlet version, Project Scorpion version of the Xbox One X. So it's sort of like, I'm a tool, I'm the idiot who's the early adopter, but there are not many idiots like me.
I hope there's a project.
Okay. You made a lot of investment into the whole Xbox, so it's understandable that you're going to stick with that.
Well, I mean, Microsoft's making it easy for me to not do it because everything that I can play right now on the Xbox One will be available on the Xbox Series X. My entire library, all my saves and all that stuff. I am so happy we live in this age in which we can do that, because, say, I went from the Xbox to the Xbox 360. Well, sucks to be you until we release. Oh, no, they did have backwards compatibility. But, you know, even on PC, I mean, it took a long while for me to be able to play old games like Master of Magic again. And we can thank GOG for that and Steam for that. I mean, GOG especially, because GOG took these old games which were impossible to play on newer computers and said, no, we're going to fix them for you. It wasn't that. You see, here's the thing. Being having no DRM, that's fine. I don't care about DRM, or else I wouldn't be using Steam. But being able to play Master of Magic on a new computer, yeah, that gets my attention. Too many games which are not, like Grim Fandango being released remastered because you couldn't play it on Windows 10. And if you wanted to play it on Windows 7, you had to get a special software to run it. So yeah, how about you, TJ?
I mean, it's Xbox has been pretty forthcoming with its details. There's still a lot that's kind of just like up in the air with the PlayStation, and I know that we have like a lot of alleged and like a lot of rumors and a lot of that going around, but like I feel like we still have really no confirmed there's very few confirmed details about the PS5.
I think we should talk about NeoGAF for a moment, because there may be new listeners who don't know what the hell we're talking about. So NeoGAF, it's based on a previous a board called GAF, Gamers Alliance. I forgot what the initials meant. Now I can hear TJ hammering away at the keyboard to find out what it used to. But anyways, when that board died, they created NeoGAF, which was a new version. And NeoGAF has been sort of a hotbed for developers to anonymously come on and leak stuff. And a lot of stuff that appears on NeoGAF tends to be accurate. The rumors, like 90% of the time, tend to be, you can take this. And there are people who get vetted, you know, who repeatedly come up with rumors that happen to be absolutely true. So that's why when someone on NeoGAF who's been considered, you know, vetted and has been, you know, they know what they're talking about, and what they're talking about isn't just some wild rumor, people tend to pay attention. Also, NeoGAF is NeoGAF is what is like lighter and softer than 4chan, but it still can be testy.
Sure. And I'm not saying that, like, the leaks and the rumors that we've seen so far are wrong, or that there's just, like, nothing to them.
Right. It was formerly Gaming Edge Forums. And I remember Gaming Edge. That was a magazine, wasn't it? It was a new magazine.
Yes. Yeah. Gamer's Edge. But, like, I really do want to finally hear from Sony themselves on just like what this machine is, what it can do, and what they have plans for. I'm not gonna lie, as somebody who is probably going to go for PS5, it's kind of disappointing to see how sort of like close to the chest they've played with this new console generation. And I think I've already explained this in the past, but the reason why I'm going to end up probably staying with the PS5 is because a lot of different fighting games are when competitions go on, they're on PlayStation systems, and for my personal tastes, that's probably just going to end up being the PS5 for me. I have nothing against the Xbox Series X. It's very cool, and I love what Microsoft has been doing with their like programs for it. Like the Xbox Games Pass is genius.
You're a professional fighting person, though. You see, that's the thing. You actually professionally do it. For those who are new, he's actually played in tournaments and actually finished in like top 10 a few times.
Yes, I made a top 8 in Canada, and at Evo, I actually managed to make it out of pools in Mortal Kombat out of 1,700 competitors. So, and the fact of the matter is, like, that's just my personal taste, and I'm not saying, and again, I really do like what the Xbox Series X is doing. Like, Xbox Games Pass looks great. The most interesting thing I've seen of all time so far is has by far been the program that they're talking about, where if you buy a game on Xbox One, that is.
I mean, it's been around for a while, but
no. It's a better version of Xbox Anywhere. It's God, what is it called?
I forget. Xbox Game Pass Ultimate?
No, it has some funky ass name. It's some smart delivery.
Oh, right, yeah. That's the new thing.
And the idea behind it is that if you buy an Xbox One game that has smart delivery on it, then if you upgrade to an Xbox Series X, then your copy of the game will automatically upgrade to an Xbox Series X version of the game, as opposed to like playing an Xbox One version of a game on Xbox Series X. So, for instance, if you bought Cyberpunk 2077, which has been confirmed to have smart delivery, if you bought it on Xbox One, because it's going to come out on Xbox One first, then if you buy an Xbox Series X later, your copy of Cyberpunk 2077 will upgrade to an optimized Xbox Series X copy of the game.
It'll be interesting about Cyberpunk 2077, by the way, because that game is going to be resource intense, and I heard that what they're doing with it, it'll most likely play like ass on the current consoles. So we'll see. But the thing is that this is CD Projekt Red, and they know what they're doing. I mean, if it was by Crytek, then you wouldn't have to worry about graphics at all, because they know how to downgrade really easily.
Yeah. And so for the most part, Microsoft has been adopting very consumer-friendly tactics as they transition into this next generation of gaming, and it's extremely refreshing to see. I wish that Sony would take note.
We'll see. The problem with Sony is that they're behind in terms of software, and they're actually having to rent out their cloud space from Microsoft.
Yes.
Which I think is sort of like, well, you know, Microsoft had to license their Blu-ray, so fair is fair. But here's the thing. If I'm a PS5 owner, I'm really hoping that that new controller with the LED touchscreen on it is real.
Yeah, I get the feeling that it's going to be. They've already like made a peripheral for the PS4 controller, and a lot of people think that the reason why they made that peripheral for the PS4 controller is so that you can play PS4 controllers on PS5 if you have that peripheral.
Anyways, Scott?
Yes, next news.
Saying any comments before we move on?
No, I think I said my part that I wasn't really interested in the next console wars, and yeah, just going to sit that out.
Scott is really happy with his Switch.
And Steam, and GOG.
Yeah, but we're talking about consoles here, not PC.
Right, okay, consoles. Yeah, I am very happy with the Switch. The big advantage that that TJ touched on before was the mobility of being able to play these games on the go. And, you know, even if you've played this game on consoles, it's now on a portable console, so it's, you know, just that much better.
I just remembered one news item that I might have done, but I decided not to, and that is that the there's no new Switch hardware coming out and won't be announced at the at E3. Not that it's incredibly obvious, because you have had all of Nintendo's products usually have some sort of form factor upgrade. Like, you have the 3DS becoming the 3DS XL. You had, you know, even the original Nintendo Entertainment, the NES, had a different version of it coming out after a few years. So there's not going to be a new version of the Switch, which is okay. I mean, you know, I mean, basically their new version of the Switch was Switches that don't break.
Yeah.
So,
there was also the Switch Lite.
His launch Switch never broke.
There was also the Switch Lite, which took away the docked thing in order to give people a cheaper Switch that they just play on the go. Which, like, I got to be honest, I was skeptical when I saw that, because, like, why would you buy something that takes away half the functionality of it? Half the fun of the Switch, for me in particular, is that you can put it on the TV. But it caught on. And, like, I guess people really enjoy the fact that you can just have a Switch that it's just mobile all the time for cheap.
I know more than a few people who almost never play their Switch on their TV.
Yeah, so I guess – I mean, I was wrong. I'll be happy to admit that, like, the Switch Lite, like, it's the real deal. People love it.
I mean, here's the thing. If even if you're at home, if I have the Switch, I would just take it into bed with me and just lay on top of the bed and just play the Switch there.
I've definitely done that when I don't feel like playing on the TV anymore. But at the same time, it's like not only is it cool that like people have like a cheaper option for this, but they're straight up like going the Game Boy Color route with the Nintendo Switches now. They just announced they had three colors for it. They had the they had the yellow, the aqua, and the gray, and then they just came out with coral. And people are like losing their.
I saw at GameStop a used 3DS XL, which was the red one with Mario on it, and I was so tempted to purchase it.
I mean, like, definitely go for it. Go for it, Nintendo.
I'm gonna wait until it's actually like it's two generations ago, so it's really, really inexpensive. I mean, there are some 3DS games I wouldn't mind playing, but it's not a major need for me. I also saw some really sweet Xbox One controllers. I don't know. I have a feeling I'm going to be saving my pennies for the Xbox Series X Ultimate Edition. This is a name. You know what I wish they would do? Every time they release a new Xbox console, they always release special ones for the people who worked on it that are the opposite color. You know, like when the Xbox One was released, they had special white ones for people who worked on it. And I'm thinking, dudes, you know how much I would spend the extra $50 to have a white Xbox One.
You know, they should do an Xbox Series X Scarlet Edition, and it should straight up look like the obelisk from Dead Space.
They already had one that was red.
Yeah, but like
the Xbox Series X already looks like the obelisk. It doesn't look like the monolith because it's an actual square. Maybe they have one that you can put a point on it so it looks like the Washington Monument.
I just think I think they should lean into the Scarlet code name for an edition and may just make something like sinister and deadly looking.
Oh yeah, something that's red, a deep blood red. I would pay the extra $50 for that. Actually, you know, if they want, you know, they should do that with the Pro. You know, the regular Xbox Series X is black. The Pro is red.
Mm-hmm.
And it says Project Scarlet on it. I mean, my controller for the Xbox One X still has the Project Scholar in text on it. And I'm never giving that. Actually, I have my Xbox Day One controller, which is janky as hell, but I'm never giving it up because it has a Day One on it. So, yeah. I'll go the extra mile for something that's completely useless.
As long as it's cool, yeah. I mean, why not?
I will say, you know, I'm one of the few people who are approaching the 20th year of Xbox Live subscriptions. And the only reason why I wasn't a day one on Xbox Live is because I didn't have broadband at the time. I actually got broadband because I wanted Xbox Live. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. And this is something we talked about last week. We're going to talk about this week because it's too cool. Obsidian survival game of Tiny Children Grounded has a Steam page. And this comes to us from PC Gamer. Obsidian's surprising reveal from last year was that the studio principally known for RPGs is going to release a survival game, Grounded. Grounded is a pretty cute game where you play as children shrunk down to tiny size trying to survive in a backyard environment. Like other recent big survival successes, such as Subnautica, it is a defined experience with a definitive ending and a storyline to follow. Grounded just now got a Steam page ahead of its early access release sometime this year, and there's a bit more to learn about the game after its reveal announcement last November. By the way, we should also discuss that about Microsoft too, is that the other big news that came out is that Halo Combat Evolved is now on the Steam, has its Steam page, and it's available.
Yes.
And that's something that people have been really happy about, is that Microsoft has their Windows 10 store, but, hey, if you want it on Steam, guess what? It's on Steam. You won't get the achievements, you won't get the, you know, the Xbox achievements, but for a lot of people who are just PC gamers, they won't care. They just want it on Steam. They just want it on Steam, and they'll get the Steam achievements instead. According to the listing, this is going to be in grounded at early access. Roughly 20% of the full storyline, three major biomes, grasslands, the hedge, and the maze, crafting, base building, single and online co-op play, the first two tiers of weapons and armor, at least 10 insects, and an arachnophobia mode, which I'm guessing is going to be like Gears' Horde mode. Grounded will be released in early access this year in hopes for a full release sometime in 2021. I know a lot of people are surprised, well, not maybe not surprisingly, but really pumped up for this game. Two reasons.
Yes.
One, it's Obsidian. And two, it's a concept. You know, who doesn't want to play Honey, I Shrunk the Kids?
Mm-hmm. One thing that this may have been written before it happened this last weekend, but Obsidian had a huge PAX panel on Saturday, and they revealed a lot of new details about Grounded. I hope you, do you mind if I share a few of them?
No, go ahead. Go ahead, because this was last week's news item, so it doesn't include the new information.
So, first and foremost, they confirmed they're going to have crossplay on day one between PC and Xbox, which is just great. This game deserves – like, this is – it's a survival game. It's going to be a social experience.
I mean, Sea of Thieves has done good, but it hasn't done awesome. And I think this is Microsoft trying to get, you know, a Sea of Thieves that everybody wants to play.
Mm-hmm. So crossplay, day one. That's awesome.
It isn't that it's going to be crossplay with Windows 10 and the Xbox. That's a given because you can do that with Sea of Thieves. No, it's going to be crossplay with Steam, mm-hmm. which is not part of the architecture of Xbox Live. I mean, you'll have to get an Xbox Live account, like you have to get one for Halo. But the fact that you'll be able to crossplay from Steam with Xbox and Windows 10 is what people are really excited about.
Yes. So, excellent. I'm happy to hear that they're going to be doing that. Another major thing that came out of it is that this is something that came about because they now have the resources of Microsoft Game Studios to work with. They recognize that people are terrified of spiders, and so they're working on a special arachnophobia mode. And what this will do is they've been studying
the
phobia.
To remove the spiders from the game. Okay.
It will not remove the spiders from the game. What it will do is it will completely revisualize them. They've actually been studying the triggers that
They're going to make cute spiders?
They're going to make less scary spiders. Like, they've been studying the triggers that that cause people's phobia to go off when it comes to spiders, and they're building a new a visual mode that will hopefully help people that have those that phobia, like, basically help not trigger it and allow them to enjoy the game like everybody else.
If I was triggered by scary spiders, I would want it to be scary. I was like, I guess not everybody wants to be.
Right, but we're talking about, like, seize-up terrifying.
if I was seize-up terrifying about something, I would want it in my game.
So the good thing about that is that if somebody else has the arachnophobia mode turned on, it's a client-side thing, so it doesn't affect your game.
Yeah.
Which is great. So somebody else can have the arachnophobia mode turned on, you can have it turned off, and you both can enjoy the game the way you want.
I was hoping it would be a horde mode, like spiders keep attacking. I wonder what the top tier enemies are going to be like. I mean, you know, the most difficult. I know you can ride ants. They're going to be enemies that you can tame.
So two things about that. Like, this is an ecosystem, and the ecosystem reacts to you. If you mess with ants on a regular basis, they'll become like always hostile towards you. And not only will they become always hostile towards you, but they'll call, like, you start out dealing with, like, scavengers and scouts and, like, carpenters and builders. If you piss them off, they'll start calling out soldiers, which are much larger and more dangerous.
By the way, I think it's entirely appropriate that at PAX this panel was at the Dragonfly Theater.
Mm-hmm. And there are things like that where, like, there are ecosystems in play, and if you become a threat to those ecosystems, then the ecosystem will react to you accordingly. Likewise,
sure, there's going to be people who want to antagonize and just make the ecosystem more and more and more hostile.
And likewise, if you like clear out a population of a certain type of insect, then there's like you're killing a certain predator's food. And if the predator can't find that food, then they'll go somewhere else to find it.
Or
so there's
find you.
So we're talking about like an ecosystem that not only responds to you, like either gets more aggressive against you, but will also like change based on the way that you. I mean, you're basically the invasive species here. If you take out a whole bunch of aphids, which ladybugs feed on, the ladybugs aren't going to stick around. They're going to go somewhere else. And it's a massive world, so there's a lot of area for them to move around in.
You see, you couldn't do this if it was an open-ended world like Fallout 76. Since this is a game with a specific, with a beginning, middle, and end, you can actually do something like that.
Uh-huh. In the panel, they kind of described it as Metroidvania-like, which is to say as you play through the game and you continue to grow, you'll gain blueprints, and these blueprints can help you build better equipment.
And you'll also be able to access inaccessible parts of the map.
Yes. One of the things they mentioned is that there's an area of the map that has a haze that's toxic to you, and the only way to get through it is if you were to kill a certain bug and turn its head region into a facial mask.
By the way, they also said that these are not locked off. So if you can game the system and get past it, improvising some of us, more power to you.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest disappointing thing, I think, is that there are not going to be any birds in the game. Maybe there'll be bird DLC.
I got the feel like we're going through early access. There's a lot of things that they could add down the line. One of the things they mentioned that they want to try for, but they still don't have a solution for it, is weather. Because for reference, you are a 10-millimeter human being. That's actually the scale of the children, is that they're shrunk down to 10 millimeters. And so everything is enormous.
In other words, 1 centimeter.
Yeah. Everything is enormous, including, like, water droplets. If you're building a base and it rains, and the rain is, like, normal-sized rain, you're talking about basically what is a monsoon.
That's why you need to be behind. By the way, that's the other thing, is that there is going to be a base which you can just toss your stuff in, so you don't have to worry about, you know, about having loads that you have to carry and stuff like that. And, you know, base, it's like Subnautica. You know, Subnautica is all about building your base.
Right. Base.
Yeah, that's another game that I have available to me which I haven't played yet.
Yeah. So, lots of cool details on this game. I'm super excited for it. I'm really happy to see what they're doing with it. If anything, PAX East just got me more excited for it. It's so cool what they're doing.
And here's the thing. Microsoft does not give up easily. Because remember, people were mixed about Sea of Thieves, but they kept at it, and they kept adding more and more stuff. They kept on having DLC, and content expansions, so that people who have stuck with Sea of Thieves, and also new players, obviously, have been rewarded for their faithfulness. And Sea of Thieves is considered, you know, above average. It wasn't, you know, considered, you know, shit talking amazing. So now you have someone like Obsidian, who has a pedigree, you know, a real pedigree over making games that people love. I mean, I didn't love it, but a lot of people love the Outer Worlds. You know, obviously people loved Fallout New Vegas, and they love their RPGs and stuff like that. And so, you know, one of the things that people who play Grounded will probably be able to say is, yeah, we know that this is going to get support. You know, even if it's okay when it first comes out, it's going to get constant support from Microsoft, because Microsoft really wants to give you a reason to have that Game Pass. That's why Sea of Thieves is on Game Pass, because you know what? We want people to buy Game Pass. That's where we're making our money now.
Yeah. It's like I said, I really do like what Xbox has been doing. Xbox Game Pass is great. Project X Cloud is great.
So here's the
smart delivery is going to be great.
So here's the thing. You know what? I already have Xbox Game Pass, so I'll have it. You know, but if you two get it, you know, and you can get it on Steam, you can get it whatever. I could see one thing I've been doing recently is I've been doing a lot of game streams. So maybe on Mixer we can have gaming sessions and have people watching. Then I'll just upload them to YouTube.
Yeah.
Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. You can find me at Jonah Falcon on Twitter.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
And you can find Scott went to sleep again. We can tuck him in. Anyway.
You can find Scott at Alpha Shard.
Yeah. We will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone, and have fun. Be cool. Play games, y'all.
Oh, no, this didn't record. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, you killed us.
I'm looking at it. It's 40 megs. So, yeah, it recorded. Don't worry about it. Or 40 good. Gigs, whatever. 40,400 kilobytes is gigabytes, right? Yeah, that's gigabytes.
We put poor Scott to sleep with all of our fanboying over Grounded and Xbox.
You know, some people have arachnophobia. Maybe spiders make him calm and make him want to go to sleep.
I don't know. I don't even know what that would be called.
Arachnophilia. Well, that just means you love spiders.
Mm.
You know what? I'm going to say something. I know what the most feared insect in that game is probably going to be. And I think you already brought this up last week. I think the most feared insect will be scorpions.
Scorpions, yeah. We talked about scorpions and we talked about praying mantises.
Yeah. Well, we already know that praying mantises are going to be in it. I think they had a screenshot of one.
Yeah. Scary.
Anyways, bye-bye.